We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. Happy draft eve or draft day whenever you're listening to this podcast. We will have this show where I am joined by Corey Kennan to get his draft thoughts on record for this draft season. I've been meaning to get with him to break down some of the guys he has scouted, where his vibes are just a day away from the draft. And then we will have another show tomorrow, kind of looking at more of the fun stuff, the way Browns fans can be involved in the first round without a pick, maybe some prop bets. Get Andrew Spade back involved. He got done moving just the other day, so he should be set up and ready to go. Should have that for you on Thursday before the draft at some point. But this show, again, is tied to Corey's thoughts. I've had Pete on recently. I've wanted to get as many guys as I could, especially those around the OBR, their opinions on, you know, players that could mean something to the Browns and really just the draft in general. That's what we've tried to do the last few days. You've heard a lot of my opinions. So getting as many others on as we can is obviously always the goal ahead of the draft. And it should be a fun draft, even though, again, Browns aren't involved in the first day, but there's going to be some big names, some moving, some shaking at the top of the draft. Really looking forward to doing that. We will be live all weekend. I keep saying that, but we will be live all weekend. Just reminding you, all Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday for every part of the draft, talking at it through a Browns perspective. So excited to have you guys there to join us for that. This podcast is full of a lot of different players, maybe some you've heard of, some you haven't. Corey's got some takes. He's never been one to shy away from putting his opinion out there, and he does it again in this cycle, even though, you know, he might not have his time, the time that he normally does with the family expanding and all of that. He still did some scouting on some of these guys, and they stretch over the course of 365 days. So spend a good half hour with Corey, get as many of his insights as we can. I think this is a pretty good interview overall. Let's get over to it right now. All right, going to welcome in Corey Kennan. We're going to go through and talk. Listen, we talked off air ahead of time where we're just, it's a draft cycle that is probably not our best in terms of depth of players we like to know. We're two dads with two kids now in our lives. It's, you know, if you've been paying attention to his work, my work, we've been doing it for a while. And I feel like this is a class, probably maybe my ability to understand the class as a whole, Corey, kind of mirrors a little bit of where the class is in general, which is pretty consensus top heavy. It's not a deep draft, and perhaps this is what we continue to run into year over year. But I think that despite some of the depth stuff we would love, there are still some guys in this draft that are well worth taking, and hopefully you can find a path to getting these guys onto your football team. And, you know, we start, man, I would say the thing I'm most interested from you is, you know, if there are guys that we love at 54, there are guys that we love at 85, but like your dream scenario, Corey, of like guys that you can take at that position, that spot, 54, the earliest they would have selected in a significant amount of time now, multiple years, like who's the guy you're looking for? Who are two of those guys that you feel like, man, if they come away with these at 54, 85, I can't even fathom it. It's such a great outcome.
Yeah, Keon Coleman, man. If the NFL overthinks Keon Coleman down to down to 54, which the trajectory seems like we're trending in that direction. Like, again, the draft happens, and then guys who were, you know, top 20, top 30 players all draft cycle end up going top 20, top 30. I remember it was a couple of years ago, George Karloftis was this way out of Purdue, right? Like, right. He was consensus preseason, like top 10 player, top 15 player. People love George Karloftis. And we went along and it's like, oh, this guy could be there. I think they were picking 44 that year, if I remember correctly, 44. Yep. And we're like, oh, well, Karloftis should be there. And he goes 30th to the Chiefs or something like that. And he goes first round of the Chiefs. So it's like, I think we get to a point where we hit some fatigue. And I think we've kind of hit that with Keon Coleman a little bit. And I think the 4.640 tends to wear on people a little bit too. But I would be skeptical about how much NFL teams actually use 40 data anymore compared to game speed data. And I would be very skeptical about that, specifically with the Browns as well. And his game speed data, I think PFF just introduced that new metric and they released one article. They're kind of paywalling that data for their higher paying customers. But they've released one article that put Keon Coleman in the 93rd percentile in game speed data. So like, I'm not super concerned about the 4.640 there. And even at the combine, the next gen stats data had him as one of the fastest player working through the actual live drills. So like,
right.
I'm not worried about Keon Coleman's, not worried about speed at all. So I think that's the dream. If you can get Keon Coleman, who again, they've kind of veered from the analytical guardrails, you know, and Andrew Berry's kind of scoffs at them now. And over the past few drafts, that's happened. Again, you can blame COVID. You can blame whatever. Players are just older now.
I wonder if he wants to do that publicly so that people can like stop thinking they have him figured out. I wonder that, right? Uh-huh. Because some of those guardrails are pretty simple. You draft the younger guys and you can draft younger guys, right? Like we want better athletes higher up in the, like, I think that there's a little bit of GM speak there that happens where it's like, nah, we, you know.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I'm not saying he's committed to the bit so far as to draft Siaki Ika is like a see guys will be different. At least I hope not. But I do think that like some of that is bluntly obvious stuff. And he's trying to like, hey, we'll do some different things here. So stop thinking you have us figured out.
Yeah. I wouldn't love that from a practical standpoint, but if that's kind of
media,
for sure. And I mean, he gets hammered out every year at the combine. Like, dude, just stop asking questions about the guardrails. He's going to say the same thing, you know? Like, so, but going back, like, if we're looking for a prototypical prospect that fits every single mold the Browns typically have looked for,
right,
you know, 2020, 2021, young, early production, in speed game data says he meets those athletic profile. Like, it's Keon Coleman to a T. Like, this is their guy. He's 20. He was productive at Michigan State, productive at Florida State. So I think that's the dream at 54. I have three players that I've said, if it's one of these three, I'll feel really good about it at 54. So it's Keon Coleman, it's Junior Colson, the linebacker out of Michigan, and it's Mike Hall, defensive tackle at Ohio State. If it's one of those three, I feel good.
So to me, a couple things following up on that. The vibe I get, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong, but this is the situational vibe, is that there's going to be teams in the back end of the draft making some of the final selections, the Bills, the Chiefs, that are going to pick a couple of these wide receivers. We're obviously going to see the big names go early, maybe somebody in the middle of that range. But I feel like there's going to be at least five or six higher-ish end wide receivers that are sitting there between the first night and the second night, and it's the start of the second round, and it's like, man, there's like six of these guys that I could be very interested in.
Yeah.
And it's like you're going to be sitting there and it's going to be excruciating watching Philly make multiple picks in front of you and Pittsburgh make some of those picks. And like, to me, Corey, it feels like if they really want a wide receiver and they want one of those guys, they might have to JOK it and swap up to 50 or 49 or something. Do you get that vibe too? Because I just have a hard time seeing Philly in their certain situation when they need a third guy. Like, it's just they're going to go is my point in the 40s, 30, 40s.
I specifically agree with that in this draft class as well. Again, it's a historically old draft class and it's a historically small draft class in terms of just raw numbers. Again, we can talk about the depth differently. Like, just being a small draft class numbers wise doesn't mean the depth is slim. I do think the depth isn't what people say it is, but it's just a historically small class. So we're talking about, we have 2 7th round picks, you know, a 5th round pick, a 6th round pick. Like, how valuable are those going to be when we're getting down to those I mean, guys who typically would probably go fifth round are going to go third round this year. Like, that's just what we're talking about numbers wise. So, and I think Andrew Berry with the Judy trade has already said, like, I don't want picks this year. Like, I don't, he gave up a fifth and a sixth in the same year draft for Jerry Judy. So, like, I think he's already kind of tipped his hand a little bit about what he thinks of day three picks in this year's draft. Again, they just added one with Leroy Watson, but that's adding an asset for a player who at best was a practice squad guy who might have gotten claimed off of waivers anyway. He's athletic, you know, he has some tools to work with. So I think specifically this year there that the probability that they trade up is higher than years past as well.
I think that's a great point. It's a back half. Yeah. Like, you know, with Leroy Watson, you want to give us a pick for him, we'll take it. We're not collecting these picks, but we're trying to parlay them into future advancements, right? They could do again what they did last year, take a seven and make it a six. I'm sure they'll take every opportunity they can to put those in the future or wrap them into some sort of gift that you're giving back to move up five or six slots. So the thing with my call, I need to ask, like, you look at my call and I see a player that can win fast. I get it. He can do it. He just hasn't done enough of it, right? When you look at the statistical lines and you're looking at some of this, you know, production metrics, the numbers aren't as high as you would prefer them to be, but you get into the second round and it's like, hey man, these are second round picks. They're going to have a wart on the profile. Mm-hmm. Tell me why you think he can come into the NFL and over the course of a rookie deal, give you enough to feel confident that he can turn into a Matabike. Like, what's your belief system there that makes it worthwhile? Because as you know, there's not very many Grady Jarretts, but there's a lot of first and early second round guys who then become that dog that you're hoping to get with an early investment like pick 54.
Yeah, so I think I would maybe return that with a question. Do you think the Browns care about raw stats, or do you think they care about pass rush win rate and pressure numbers more than raw stats? Because in terms of pass rush win rate and raw pass rush numbers, I think my call is third in this class. Behind the two guys who are going to go first round, in Newton and in Byron Murphy. Or no, I think he might be higher than Byron Murphy, but Byron Murphy's a way better run defender. But he's the top three in this class in any pass rush, like, deep dive metric outside of pure raw. He only has three sacks this year, you know? So, like, I tend to think they'd value that more. And then, again, you turn on his tape and his tape kind of mirrors what Jim Schwartz tends to look for in a defensive tackle. So, again, I don't know what the hell the Siaki Ika pick was last year. I don't know what that was. I think you and I are in pretty much agreement that we're probably talking about a dead asset there already. But man, look at the defensive tackles they've signed outside of Dalvin. Again, they needed an anchor bat, and I think they knew that. But outside of Dalvin. And look at the defensive tackles, more importantly, that they tried to sign last year, the Draymond Jones, the Javon Hargrave. They went after both of those guys, offering them both top dollar on the market. They both chose different places. And then look at the guys who have been productive with Jim Schwartz this past year, Shelby Harris, Mo Hurst. It's more of those slippery, I mean, Shelby Harris, it's probably disingenuous to lump him into that, but those slippery pass rushers who can make an impact when you put them on the field in passing situations are those gap shooters are more what Jim Schwartz, it seems like, tends to fall in love with. And I think that's Michael Hall to a T.
Yeah, you got to certainly look at some of the projection to answer the question you threw back at me. There will be people who push back, who evaluate this. And, you know, I think we know the draft is not an exact science. There's people that believe that if you didn't do it in college, how can we believe with certainty that you're going to do it in the NFL? Mm-hmm. And while I understand that sentiment, some of what you're doing with second round picks is taking an incomplete profile and using your own thought process to sort of paint over, white it out. And this is the thing we think the whole profile looks like, where with first rounders, you have a better opportunity to get a more complete picture. So you're saying Michael Hall here in this scenario has only played 600 college snaps. They were a damn productive 600 college snaps, but we have to believe that we can take this guy who has quite obviously a great feel for early career. He's still not even 21 pass rush traits. And we can slowly, we're not asking Michael Hall to come into our organization and play 700 rookie snaps.
We need you
to play 350 to 450. And rush. We are going to put you on the field when we either know we're going to be predictable pass or a team's trying to catch up. And that's where he can feast. And then you try to develop the rest of the portfolio. That's where kind of trying to understand why teams go from, like, this guy is this player to this guy is how we think he gets to this player. the Browns have put themselves in a chance now, whereas years past, maybe 3-4 years ago, we're taking Michael Hall because we have to play him. They don't have to play him. He's going to earn his playing time, but you're also putting him into situations so his mental early in his NFL career is, I can do this. I can win and pass. Now, can I two gap? Can I anchor an ISO block? Like, can I anchor a double, right? A tag block working to climb? And it's like, why not? He's not a guy that's going to anchor that and split. He's going to get,
he's sub 300 pounds. Yeah.
There's going to be some ugly reps. Yeah. There's going to be some ugly reps there. But what they're trying to do is paint this picture of a guy of what he can do early to contribute. And then by the end of his rookie deal, have a chance to play a meaningful full-time role when we pay him that second contract. And that's the same with somebody like Coleman, because again, the Browns have a finite need to play they need outside receivers. They do. They have a bunch of guys. You know, I think we can agree Elijah Moore is an outside receiver, but he's trapped in a small receiver's body. He doesn't play with a big catch radius. He doesn't play with the tool set most outside guys do. So that kind of restricts a little bit of who he is, but we definitely know he's not a slot, right? Like, we've watched him play slot. He doesn't have a feel for that. So that's where you get a little tricky in his portfolio, but we want to develop. We have two big body inside guys in Tillman and Judy. Do we have somebody that we can play on the outside? Maybe as that solo split end X that can do this stuff. That's where they're trying to not like what I'm trying to express, Courtney. I maybe you agree with me, maybe you don't. They're not chasing, we need a receiver. They're chasing, we need an X. We are not chasing, we need a defensive tackle. They're chasing, we need third down, a guy who can come and contribute on third downs. We don't need a three down Mike. We need a two down Mike. We don't need a corner that can, we need a corner that can step on the field and comfortably play with plus traits if Denzel goes down for 4 weeks, like he kind of does every year, right? Yeah. That's what they're looking to do. And that's such a leg up in trying to find someone at 54 and 85. And that's the place that they're finally in, where a lot of other organizations have been constantly living in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm actually going to record an entire podcast episode on this, but like the common fan, I just still think there's a lacking of how hit or miss the draft is. They think, oh, you're a second, third round pick. If that pick hits, you're a bust. But it's like, teams value picks from 20 to like 45 is pretty similar value.
Right.
Like, if you're not picking in the top 15, the odds of you getting a guy are very, very small. And that's why you see the Browns on day three taking guys like DeJuan Jones, who had some questions about his weight and his work ethic and what he likes to do off the court or like off the field, whether he loves basketball more, you know, and the guys like Perrion Winfrey, where, you know, there's plenty. That's a loaded player, right? So like, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But when we're talking about a round four value, I think the Browns are paying Perrion Winfrey like $250,000 in dead money this year. Like,
yeah.
You take that shot in a fourth rounder to get a player you think has plus tools, plus traits, because like, what are the odds you're going to hit on a guy that goes to church every Sunday? And you know what I'm saying? Like, it is what it is. It's the nature of the business.
Nothing against you church going folks. It's fine.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. Like, the thing I think we were getting caught in, Corey, is that when you look at the last 2 years now of drafting and now the third year entering this, they haven't even made a second round pick. So we fall into the trap of like, you know, they take two guys in back-to-back drafts who could justifiably on redraft be first round picks. It's early for DeJuan. There are holes in his game, but you would probably redraft that and say, okay, we'll take that guy into the first round. I think it's pretty obvious at this point, Martin Emerson, 2 years, a pretty good play, but those guys hitting, it is not common. And we're tricked into believing the Browns have these premium assets that they don't have. They don't have them. So, and another fallacy that I've talked about this on various episodes of the show, but like, you know, people give Andrew Berry a bunch of flack for like, he doesn't draft defensive tackles well, and he doesn't draft wide receivers well. He hasn't committed a premium selection to those positions. So I think we're talking about hit rates being really low. And again, Amon-Ra St. Brown doesn't help the cause here because everyone's drawn to that name. But like, I think that we have to give, like, Andrew Berry's done a nice job within the restrictions of what that trade, whoever you want to put that trade on primarily is your choice, but within the restrictions of that trade, the drafting that they have done has been stellar to get some long-term answers here for them. And I am very excited, Corey, for the future of what first-round picks for him and how he uses those assets and parlays them into future drafts and whatnot, because we don't even have a great feel for Andrew Berry as a drafter. We have two drafts with premium positions that give us like Newsome and Wills, but like we need more. We need 5 years of that stuff to really know, right?
Right. And again, people, it's funny that you mentioned Newsom and Wheels, obviously his two first round picks that he's had. Two also of the players in this fan base that probably get more heat than any other player on the roster on each side of the ball. Yeah. And I think that kind of plays into like Andrew Berry's perception as a drafter as well. But like even Wills and even Newsom to start for 4 years, to start for 5 years as a first round, especially even Newsom, a back end of the first round, is still that's an upper probably 85th percentile in a first round pick. Like
he was picked late. It wasn't early.
Yeah.
In the first round.
Right? Even the 10th overall pick with Wills to have a 4 year starter. He's going to start this year again. They already gave him his cash up front. He's starting. Like it is what it is, but like, so even to get a 5 year starter,
folks are writing his obituary and he has every chance to prove he's worth another contract this year. I mean, there's a world where Jed has a nice season, stays healthy and plays fairly well. I don't think Jed's ever going to be right. He's never going to be the elite tight. He's not going to be Andrew Thomas. He's not going to be worse. That's unfortunate. I mean, he could I think you and I have been some of the more vocal, like talent is there people, but, and maybe Dickerson unlocks something in him he hasn't found with Cal. It's possible, but like, I just think it's hard sometimes for people to wrap their mind around the outcomes of picks and like what they expect them to be, because they're looking at one or two teams' results against what's the 29 other teams' result around them too. And they only see their own history. They don't see the history of the league, and that can blind people to some of the outcomes here.
Yeah. And I think winning obviously is like, go look at Brandon Bean, his drafts in Buffalo, man, they're terrible. But he hit his quarterback and they go to the playoffs every year. So like nobody, there's no microscope on him, you know, the way there is on Andrew Berry. But his drafts are terrible hit rate. Again, if you hit on 30% of your picks as a general manager, you're probably one of the better drafters in the NFL. Like that's what it is.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The OBR is proudly sponsored by Game Time Ticket App. When you're buying those tickets and it's the last minute, you don't have to be stressed out. You can go to GameTime.co or use the Game Time app to make those last-minute ticket decisions in the best possible way with a fast and easy way to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. The app does a fantastic job of finding opportunities near you for events, both, like I said, sports and otherwise. We have a comedy show that we found recently with the best price that we could possibly find using Game Time. Great seats. You can scout out the seats, have a great experience, and get the image of those seats all within the app or online, whatever you would like to do. So Game Time is the fast and easy place for those last-minute ticket deals. So take advantage, snag your tickets with Game Time, and avoid the stress. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the promo code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create that account, use the promo code OBR, get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last-minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day. And that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. And Andrew's done a nice job with free agency friendly stuff happens with them and Jimmy Haslam and the salary cap that has helped them navigate some of the contracts that they have passed out. There's no denying that. That's a conversation for another time. But within the confines of like what Andrew Berry's done, I think it's been more than fine. Let's navigate back into sort of some of your guys. So you mentioned your three guys at 54, and then the rest of the draft, Corey. I hate doing target selection stuff. It's such a toss up. Mm-hmm. But just give us, you know, four or five guys that you've scouted that you're like at various points. Doesn't have to be a guy at 85 or two or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like just guys you've thought I would, you know, over the years you've talked about Alex Wright and you've talked about some others. Then they found their way to the Browns. So like, who are some other guys that you're pounding the table for?
Yeah, one more guy at 54 that I left out is Christian Haynes, the guard out of UConn. Man,
he can play.
Dude,
I just
that dude's
worry.
Mean. He's nasty.
It's the nasty age stuff that I hate it. Yeah. I hate it, Corey, because he can play. And I
think guard is like a position they're thinking about. Like
I do too.
Joel had a pretty significant injury last year.
I'm with you.
Teller was probably their best lineman. And again, he's only 29. So like they could even extend him and he'd be fine. But like that's a position they have to think about. And I don't think that I mean, I like Luke Whippler, but I don't think he's a starting guard right now. I don't think they have that guy in the building right now.
I don't either. I would not complain. You would not find this account over here complaining if they take a 24-year-old. I know you and I see Ricky Pearsall a little different, but if they drafted him somewhere along the lines of in the 60s or 70s, if they move back, I don't care that he's 24. I just want guys that can play. I don't. I understand there's some metrics that say that just because a guy is older doesn't mean he's a better player. I'm not doing that. You're not doing that. I just want to find guys who can play. When you don't have premium assets all the time, find guys who can play. And I think that that's like the trick here is that you can get so worried about, oh man, he's going to be 23 in the middle of the summer. Like who cares? Like at this point,
it's not a top 10 pick.
Draft younger. I get it. All things even, you take a younger, it's common sense, but we're not talking about drafting Jordan Akins at 27. We're talking about 24. Like he can still get another contract at 28, 29, and he can still play two or three, four more years for you. That's a great NFL outcome where if you're like, oh man, you know, this player, we think Haynes is great. I think he's got potential to be an all pro player, maybe make some Pro Bowls. But God, that son of a bitch is 24. I don't know. We'll take this 22-year-old who we think may get to his level someday. That's dangerous operating procedure.
It is.
A dangerous thing. Now, I get it when you're investing premium picks. You're investing big dollars, big commitment. Totally get it. But I think it's a slippery slope that you can get too caught. I think some in this circle of covering Brown's draft stuff get too caught up in that, man.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. But going to some other guys that I love, again, probably round three, round four. And I think tight end's another position they're going to look at. I mean, if you look at the investment they made, I don't think Giovanni Ricci is a lock to make the roster. I think he got like hundreds of thousands of dollars of guaranteed money and not millions of dollars of guaranteed money on his contract. So I don't think that guy's a lock to make the roster. Jordan Akins is going to be on the roster because he's a $2 million tight end and you're not going to find anybody, you know, on the market for better than that. But there's definitely room for a tight end in this roster. And when I think about a tight end two in this offense that complements David Njoku so well, in a system that loves to run a lot of 12 personnel, I don't think it gets much better than the Kansas State kid, Ben Sinnott. He's an ass kicker. He's also an athlete, so he can go out and he can win one-on-ones. But in the trenches, man, that dude will blow you off the ball. And again, that's not to say David Njoku can't block, so you need a second guy who can, right? But that's to say, like, if you're gonna run 12 personnel, which is the, you know, analytically the most efficient formation to throw out of, right? Because you're forcing a team to potentially keep another linebacker on the field, then like, you've got a guy who can either, if they decide, no, we're gonna stick a nickel out there, you can bury him, and if you put a linebacker out there, you can beat him. So like, I think Ben Sinnott is the ideal tight end, like the ideal 12 personnel tight end in this draft.
I think Ricci is the backup if that type of player who you're referencing, mm-hmm. Sinnott, one of them, doesn't come to fruition. It's quite clear to me that their lack of movement at that position tells us that they would like to find a guy in this draft, and Sinnott is like,
he's an ass-kicker.
It's varying from evaluator to evaluator. Like, Dane has him as a fourth-round grade on him. Like, I don't think he's going to be there in the fourth round by any means, but, like, can you get him at 85? If you could get him at 85, you'd feel pretty dang good about that, man. Because, like, again, I like people like Jatavion Sanders. I talked to Pete about that. He likes him a lot. He can't block. I mean, there's not block. And then there's, like, 8 bench reps. Like, that's – I mean – I don't know. How are you playing tight end?
He's not an athlete either.
It's tricky. It's tricky. There are parts of his game I get the appeal, but like, how is that something you're consistently using to be a part of where I think their offense is going? I start to question that a little bit. But somebody who can block early on and has comfort doing the off wing, slot, movement, snap, like he can do those things whenever they decide to snap the football or climb to a linebacker and run a little, you know, as a part of duo additional schemes, like, but also be a guy who can slide to the flat or run a varying route from the flat of RPO stuff. Like, that makes perfect sense to me. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have to strain my brain to see the fit. Whereas some other tight ends, I think you do. And that's where you start to get like, I don't love the fit there, especially using a premium pick.
Yeah. And I again, that's why I'm saying like 85, they don't have a fourth, yeah. But again, would they package up some of those day three picks and come up and just draft in the fourth and call it a day? Like, I mean, they're going to have a hard time finding a team who's going to want day three pick. You know, like that's right. That's the other tricky thing. Like, people can say, well, why don't they just trade up then? Well, you got to find some team that wants these picks. Like, and nobody wants them. Nobody wants them. So this year. So, yeah, if you can get him at 85, I'd feel pretty good about that. Another guy, and I know there's a lot of contention around this player, but Jermaine Burton, man, like his tape is so good. The Alabama wide receiver. Again, he played in an offense that threw the ball the least amount, like I think 120th in the nation at Alabama this past season. Right. And the quarterback he did play with was pretty late and inaccurate when he was throwing the football for the most part. So like, but he didn't even lead the team in targets and led the team in receptions. So like, I think that speaks volumes. His average depth of target speaks volumes. But again, there are the things, you know, he did punch a girl when Tennessee fans stormed the field when Tennessee upset Alabama last year in 2022. He did quietly was told to transfer from Georgia to Alabama because they basically said, hey, man, you've worn out your welcome here. So that's a thing. And that's one thing that I've heard from people that I've talked to is there's like nothing scathing off the field with him, but he's just one of those guys that kind of just wears thin on you. That just kind of wears out his welcome everywhere he's been. But he's also the kind of player we're talking about when we talked about DeJuan Jones and we talked about Perrion Winfrey. Like, if he's there at 85, I mean, all things considered, this guy's probably a top 50 talent. But if he's there at 85, do you think about it then? Like, if NFL teams are low on him because of some of these other concerns.
His profile is more complete than George Pickens. And we thought mm-hmm. that George Pickens, and we're not going into it on this pod, but like the things tossed around about George Pickens were worse. They were awful.
Mm. Oh, so my God. Like, yeah, terrible.
You're talking about a more complete profile. He's going to get he's selected in the second round somewhere. He could get to the third. I just think when teams like you and I talked about a minute ago, when the wide receivers start disappearing and there's a team in the mm-hmm. 60s or 70s that are saying to, and he could get to 85. 85 is like,
I think if he's there at 85, he's a Brown. Like that's my thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on the thing we don't know, which is how they brought him in. How did he treat them? the things we don't know when they spent one-on-one time, when they actually went to the side of talking to the people that know him. Has he found a way to mature, right? Nick Saban, nobody knows him better than Tommy Rees. Nobody knows him better. So that's going to provide enough inside intel. But again, you watch his film and you're like, this is a guy that's taken in the late one, early two, if he was not carrying the weight that he's carrying from this off-field stuff. So I definitely see the path there. It's just, again, a matter of how did he do when he got with teams in a one-on-one setting? Did he handle himself well?
Right. And the Rees thing is huge in Cleveland. Obviously, that was his offensive coordinator last year.
Right.
And I know a Notre Dame staffer, and I asked him, like, hey, man, what do you think? Like, Tommy Rees, blah, blah, blah. Do you have any idea of like what he thinks of this guy? And he's like, no, I don't. But like one thing I do know about Tommy is that he won't put you on the field if he doesn't trust you. And so I think just the, like he doesn't care how talented you are. He will not put you on the field if he doesn't trust you. So I think in and of itself that Burton was their leading receiver, that Burton was on the field, I think it gives us a little hint. But again, we really don't know. We don't know what they're talking about behind closed doors.
Yep. Yeah, we'll find out about that one soon enough. Any other late guys that you like or prefer in this one, if they can?
Man, late?
156 to
156, whatever. Yeah. I mean, if Malik Washington, the wide receiver out of Virginia, falls that far, I've kind of noticed a trend that they're kind of bringing in a lot of – they're meeting with a lot of kind of smaller yak monster kind of wide receivers this draft cycle. And he kind of fits that – definitely fits that mold. He had the second most yak of any wide receiver in the nation last year. I mean, people use the term muscle hamster to describe Doug Martin, but like he's a muscle hamster in terms of a wide receiver. Like he's just a stocky dude. And I have a really funny quote from him. I asked him at the combine. I was like, so just like something clearly clicks for you when you have the ball in the open field. And he told me, he goes, it just makes my mind fuzzy being thought about being brought down by one guy, was his answer. He's like, it just doesn't make sense for me. It makes my brain fuzzy.
I love that. That's
which is really
answer.
Funny. But I really like Malik Washington. I like UCF's Javon Baker, but I think he's going to go earlier than – I think he's one of those wide receivers because the board's going to get cleared out fast. I kind of think of him similar to Cedric Tillman, like the same kind of concern of like, but he ran a slim route tree in college. But his playback in college is really small. Like, how's that transition to the NFL going to be?
Right.
In terms of running the route tree, I did go to the quarterback wide receiver combine day live and just watch the guys run routes. You get a good feel. You can watch the guys throw live. You get a good feel. And I did think like, oh, this guy can run routes. Like he's got a good hip sync. He gets in and out of his breaks really well, even though he wasn't asked to do it. So those are two guys that in the wide receiver class that I still like. Oh man, if we're talking offensive line, the offensive line depth really clears out this draft class. Really fast.
Yeah, it does. Is there, let me ask you this, is there a running back you prefer at any stage late?
So I'm still skeptical they're going to take one day two.
Me too.
I tend to think that they like Deontay Foreman quite a bit based off of some of the advanced metrics of what Deontay Foreman does when he gets an opportunity to perform. I like Tyrone Tracy out of Purdue, but he's another kind of one of those guys who's a little bit older. Isaiah Davis out of South Dakota State, man, it'd be really funny if they carried two South Dakota State running backs, but I think he's the better, like the better prospect. I mean, Strong's probably a better back now because he's been in the NFL for a few years, but as far as prospects coming out of South Dakota State, Isaiah Davis is a bulldozer, man. Analytically, he produces the most against heavy boxes of any, again, and some of the FCS stuff can weigh down that data or like make it a little bit iffy, but I like Isaiah Davis quite a bit. And then Kamani Vidal out of Troy is the other guy late that I would say that would
good
be
here.
Late guys
some common name crossover there for sure between some of the stuff I've talked about, some of the stuff we've had on. Wanted to throw that out. I mean, I know you've talked a little bit about Burton. I think that's been a guy you've kind of predicted just by virtue of like, you know, available cost, and the Browns have been clearly willing to swing for some of those guys in that similar range. So, you know, that's definitely a spot. Keon Coleman, I love to hear that. All around good stuff, Corey, man. I know that you usually get a chance to put out the draft guide and some of that stuff in the dad full plate schedule didn't happen this year, but I'm sure you'll get around to it as those little ones become a little more independent in the coming years. We always value your opinion, buddy. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, absolutely, Jake. Anytime you need me.
All right, that's a wrap. Thanks to Corey for his time. And as always, guys, thanks to you for being here, making this podcast a part of your day. If you can, please go over to the OBR website. We have a ton of great prospect write-ups. We have a ton of great mock drafts that are happening over the next few hours leading up to the draft. Just a lot of stuff to get yourself ready for the first round. Obviously, keeping our eye on late in the first round to see what's available for day two when the Browns actually do get involved. As I always say as well, please rate and review the podcast if you can. Helps us get found by those looking for a new Browns podcast to consume. And check back in tomorrow. We'll be here with Andrew Spade and have some first round fun stuff for you. Until then, guys, be safe and go Browns.